Hello and welcome to this special episode of Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. This is the third episode in our special series celebrating truth tellers in our communities. And the reason we're doing this is because it can be really hard these days to speak an obvious truth out into the universe and to deal with whatever blowback might result for you personally or professionally or in some cases politically. And perhaps on no other issue in the last few years has that been more true than the pandemic and COVID-19. As we know, yesterday's conspiracy theory is now today's fact. But there were a lot of people, including individuals in the medical community, who were speaking out on some of the mandates and the efficacy of some of the things that the government was doing. One of them is Dr. Houman Hammadi. He's a California doctor who started speaking out early and often about some of the things that Governor Gavin Newsom was doing in California. And he has continued what I really consider advocacy in trying to separate things that are reasonable from things that are unreasonable. Dr. Hammadi, welcome back to Undivided. Nice to see you.
Thanks so much, Brandi, for having me again.
What's a life like for you these days?
Been busy trying to take care of all the research projects I do and doing a lot of media appearances at the same time.
Yeah, I see you on Fox News quite a bit. Has that just been kind of an interesting new beast in your life?
It's not really a career. It's more of an unpaid hobby, but I'm enjoying it. I end up on Fox News at night a lot with the new host, Trace Gallagher. It's a show that's broadcast out of LA. It's the first show that I think they've had consistently on a day-to-day basis out of Los Angeles and the studios down the street. So for me, it's very convenient. And for them, it gives a chance to have an LA-based set of guests that they regularly tap into with me and a handful of others who are regularly on, and frankly, it's the best team I've ever dealt with. So they're great, and it's really a privilege to be on as often as I am.
Well, you're natural at it, and you also have important things to say, and so I hope they have you on more often. You know, the last time that we had you on to chat, it was Assembly Bill 2098 was still under consideration, which would have perhaps taken away doctors' licenses to practice if they went against conventional scientific consensus on COVID-19. That passed and was signed by the governor, wasn't it?
That's correct. It passed and it was signed by the governor, but it hasn't done very well since.
Update us. How so?
So a handful of physicians and lawyers got together, some good friends of mine, in fact, like Janine Yunes and Azadeh Khatibi and a handful of others, and decided to sue the governor and sue the state, claiming that this is a First Amendment violation, because it really arbitrarily restricts physicians' ability to practice as they wish and speak as they wish. It went before a judge who agreed that this does potentially pose a major problem. He actually called it nonsense, in his words, and put a temporary injunction against the law. So even though it has passed and been signed, it cannot be enforced until there's a trial or a settlement, at which point we'll see what happens. But it's looking very much like this will not go anywhere.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of estimate as to when we could see some finality on that decision?
I think it's too early to tell at this point. A lot of it depends on how the state decides to take this and how the court system goes.
I mean, any hope that maybe the governor will just say, you know what, let's just throw this out, as opposed to move forth and try to just fight for it?
Has Governor Gavin Newsom given up on anything yet during the pandemic? When you look at him, he's got a nice track record of laws being struck down as unconstitutional, the most famous of which was his church and house of worship closure during COVID, right? That was struck down as unconstitutional. I think that's where AB 2098 is headed as well.
Yeah. So I wanted to have you on because we're doing this series talking about people who have, in some instances, really gone out on a limb, you know, career-wise or reputation-wise, to speak what they thought were truths and to really challenge prevailing narratives. And in watching kind of what you've been doing closely, I know we don't really know each other, but on social media, and we've had you on the show once, I just think you fit really nicely into that narrative. For you, in pushing back against some of the COVID mandates and COVID policies, has it gotten easier over time? You know, is it easier today to do that than it was a year or two ago to do that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, Brandi. It's actually gotten exponentially easier. And there are a couple of reasons why. One is we have more and more evidence coming out that what we've been saying all along, based on common sense and based on the facts that we did have at the time, is correct. And second, we're seeing a lot of people shifting their opinions as a result of that, right? Things that are now looking you in the face, you can't ignore anymore. When we talked about learning loss and social and academic and psychological problems caused to children by school closures as just one of many examples, you know, to us, it seemed obvious that this would happen. To many, they said no way. And then they dug in deeper and deeper and deeper. And it wasn't until their own child was impacted in such a way that you can no longer ignore that they had to say, you know what? Yes, this is happening. At some point, people reached the breaking point where they couldn't turn the other way, where they couldn't self-gaslight, or where they couldn't be gaslit successfully by politicians who said, no, you're wrong. Your emotions are wrong. Your observations are wrong. And at some point, a lot of people began to switch. And so now we're in an era in the last week or two, in fact, where the government and the media have begun to switch en masse. And now that those things are changing, it's making our jobs a lot easier. Now we're saying, you know, we told you so. And beyond that, rather than just, I think, acting all smug and gloating about it, we're looking ahead. We're asking ourselves, how can we prevent this from happening again? What kind of steps can we take to use a horrible word, vaccinate the country and the world against, you know, similar policies in the future and really have systems in place to prevent the censorship and the mandates and all the unscientific policies from happening in the name of the greater good.
And I think that's a really productive place to take this conversation. I do want to focus in on something you said, which is sort of the, you know, the I told you so, or people just all of a sudden coming around to something that folks like you have been just screaming from the rooftops. Mm-hmm. Is there an element of frustration about, you know, there's so many people who were vilified. I mean, our governor compared people who didn't get vaxxed or didn't think like him to domestic terrorists. Do you harbor any ill feelings or ill will toward those people?
I think it's impossible for anyone to completely forgive and forget. At the same time, I'm not the kind of person who likes to look back. It doesn't do any good. I like to look ahead and I like to say, how can we prevent people from this, like this, from getting this kind of power in the future? How can we prevent these kinds of policies from being enacted in the future or enforced in the future? And how do we apply a sense of common sense, not even thinking about the partisan aspects of it, but rather thinking about just the medical, the scientific, and the societal aspects of things? What one thing that you know we've learned out of this, I hope, is that zero COVID at all costs or reduced infections at all costs doesn't make any sense. The costs have to be considered no matter what you do on a societal basis as well as on an individual basis when it comes to, you know, masking, vaccines, et cetera.
When we talk about that, I suppose it's kind of twofold. You know, it's how can we change the way the public reacted or accepted some of the things the government did, and then how do you sort of change or prevent the government from doing the things that it did? You know, you mentioned the last couple of weeks, it's been this real momentum toward the media shifting its narrative, and one of the big things is around the lab leak theory. Why do you think so much of the public and the press was willing to rule that out so early as absolute conspiracy?
Easy. It's because you had government, you had the NIH, you know, National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease Director, Dr. Fauci, Francis Collins, head of NIH, organizations that happen to have potentially funded gain of function research in the Wuhan lab that may have actually directly led to the pandemic happening, who really did not want anyone to go down that path. At this point, it's very obvious. When you have them telling the rest of the government, this is false, not saying why they're saying this, but saying, oh, from our perspective as scientists, so trust us, there's no way that this was a lab leak. And then having government tell social media and media that you have to censor anyone who says otherwise and mock them and ridicule them and exclude them. Of course, that's what's going to happen. And regular people, once that's all you hear, not because that's what's true, but because everyone else has been silenced or censored, guess what? That's what you know. And I think it really teaches us that it is possible, even today, even in a post-World War II era, where we said we're going to never allow this sort of government thinking to start, you know, shutting individual groups of people down, all of a sudden we see it happening yet again, and albeit in a different way. But nonetheless, we're seeing government be able to, you know, villainize whole swaths of people based on simply what they believe or their theories that ended up being correct.
Yeah, and I know neither of us are psychologists, but do you think it's more so out of fear or kind of favor? Is it more so, oh, my political side is saying this, so I must believe that at all costs, or I'm scared of being labeled XYZ, so I'm not even going to consider this as a possibility?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that one of the tragedies that happened is that the pandemic became politicized to begin with. Right. You had there was this. Unfortunately, the pandemic happened right around the time of a presidential campaign. And so it was very easy for both sides, especially the opposition, to use it as a way of trying to trash the incumbent. So they said anything they tell you is wrong. In fact, remember, Gavin Newsom, governor of California, before the election occurred, said, I'm not going to allow a single dose of that vaccine to be given in California until I have my own independent commission of my own scientists who will study it and determine whether it's safe and effective enough to administer to Californians. The same guy, right after the election, what does he do? He starts pushing it on the entire population, including threatening to push it on children. Why did that happen? It's because we politicized these issues. And I think one lesson we've learned is to do not politicize health. It's fine to politicize foreign policy. It's fine to politicize taxation. Those are great. But when it comes to health and science, certain things are just plain old fact. And you shouldn't use politics to try to twist them to someone's political advantage. It ends up harming people. And that's the problem.
Have you seen in covering this, you know, you sent out a tweet recently about reminding, you've sent out a few, but reminded me that of things I had forgot that the government had did that in hindsight are just wild, like Newsom shutting off electricity to party houses that were violating, you know, COVID crowd sizes. And I guess in hindsight, and when we look forward about how do we prevent these things, when you look at things that are so absolutely absurd for the government to have done and for some people to have accepted as a necessity, how do we even begin to break through and move on from that?
Yeah, so that was LA Mayor Garcetti who had threatened to and actually did, I think, begin to shut down utilities to houses that were having parties, which I cannot fathom that anyone at any point accepted this would be okay under any circumstance, let alone, you know, to prevent potential infections. It just makes no sense creating phone lines to rat out your neighbors. They literally said, call this number and you can report your neighbors if they're having a party. We'll come shut off their utilities. Does that make any sense? Is that even American? No, but they went there and they did it for political purposes. And guess what? It worked for them for a very, very long time. It worked. I think we have to have measures in place, solid legal measures in place, perhaps at the Supreme Court level. So it would apply to the entire nation that would prevent this from ever happening again. Just makes no sense. And I think it's cruel.
Yeah. And how do you, and I think small businesses too, you know, we had the NARC line for small businesses, you know, getting tattled on for just trying to maintain a living and keep their employees getting a paycheck. You know, when I think about it, though, because we don't know what we're going to face in the future, right?
Yeah.
We could face a pandemic that truly is to the level of seriousness that might justify some of the more extreme measures that were taken. You know, COVID wasn't that. It wasn't as deadly as, you know, it had been made out to be, right? So how do you craft some sort of limitations or policy to plan for the unknown?
Very good question. So first, going to what you said. You said COVID didn't necessarily rise to that level. I think there are a lot of us out there who believe that no matter how horrible a future pandemic, if one does occur in our lifetimes, I doubt it will, is nothing would justify the measures that were taken, that we need to actually empower individuals to make decisions for themselves, whether it's individuals, whether it's businesses, even whether it's schools. We should never be telling them you have to close. We should never be telling them you can't leave your home or travel or do these other things. At the best, put recommendations, strong recommendations, but allow people to live their lives. Because if you're imprisoned, what's the point of being alive? At one point, people just, as you can see what happened in China with their zero COVID policies, people begin to lose it, frankly. And that's not where we want to go. So if the treatment is worse than the problem, I think there's a potential issue there. In fact, there's a major issue there. I think, you know, what we need to do is not have, centralized control at the WHO level or even at the federal level or even at the state level, I think, is dangerous. I think these sorts of issues are local, right? Each community, each population has its own unique set of needs, and it's the own population that can tolerate different things. And I think we need to really factor those things in. What works in South Bend, Indiana may not be applicable to Manhattan or Los Angeles, right? And so I think decentralizing that decision-making, but also kind of having a strong set of evidence-based policies would make a lot of sense. That's part of the reason why I think we need to look ahead rather than look back and just only begin to attack the people who are responsible. We also need to look back, have a national COVID commission that really is empowered, just like the 9/11 commission, to look at exactly what happened, what went wrong, how, and create a, you know, list of recommendations for how we can prevent it from happening in such a way again. And once we create that framework, we can begin to, at a local level, figure out, okay, what are the steps that we take and what are the limits on what we can do, right? How far can we go before we say enough? Let's let the people do what they want.
Have you seen any of the worst offenders even remotely suggest they'd be willing to support some sort of, you know, look back at hindsight and debrief? I mean, our governor, Jay Inslee, still has a vaccine mandate in place. Yeah. You know, we have a staffing crisis and he still will not let go of the vaccine mandate. So I guess, how do you get the worst offenders on board with the idea that they can't do it again?
Elections. Right now, you know, we have elections coming up, and the fact that elections are coming up make it very difficult for those in power, the incumbents who are largely responsible for what has happened, to say, oh, yeah, I think we did some things wrong that caused some major harm. Let's go and list those things. Right. They're basically fueling their opponents. They're doing opposition research on their behalf. I think post-election, especially when or if we have different people in power at various levels of government, particularly perhaps in the White House and the Senate, we're going to see the capability to really go back and do that. You're already seeing that with the House composition changing and the majority changing hands, a lot of investigations being opened. You're seeing physicians like Drs. Marty McCary and Martin Kulldorff and Jay Bhattacharya, for example, come before House oversight and start testifying and talking about all the stuff that they had been saying that had been censored by everyone except what they had been labeled as right-wing organizations, all of which ended up being correct. This is just the tip of the iceberg, I think. Once we have different composition of people in government, that's going to become a lot more widespread. And I think eventually we're going to have a national, really a day of reckoning, or maybe a year of reckoning, to really go back and say, okay, this really is what went wrong. And now, rather than just focus on the past, look ahead into the future.
And what does that mean for you? You know, it's kind of a weird question, but how has this changed your planned trajectory in life? You know, pre-pandemic and what, you know, Dr. Hamadi was planning to do with his life, and how has this sort of changed it either for the better or the worse?
So this is not about me. Nothing I do has really been about me. I fought against school closures while my kids were in a private preschool that was open and didn't mask and was basically completely normal. I was fighting for everybody else. And so I try not to make it about me. I try to make it about society. I like to do what I can when I can. If I'm not useful anymore, I'll step aside. If I am useful in the future, I'll definitely participate. I think I've, on a personal level, never really thought much, as much, beyond my own sphere, of where I am in my own medical research, for example, to broader issues of what the FDA and the NIH and the CDC are capable of doing. But now, sure as heck, I am now laser focused on those issues. And so if I ever have the opportunity in the future, for example, to, to change how the FDA approaches safety assessments and drug approvals, how they approach messaging safety problems and forcing drug companies to really allow patients to make informed consent decisions rather than just ramming products down their throat. And also, by the way, learning from the vaccine approvals, how the FDA, if they put their mind to it, could really accelerate things when appropriate, not when they're unsafe, obviously, but when the, you know, it proved that the FDA, if they really put their minds to it, is able to go through drug assessments and approvals much more quickly than they did before, not necessarily shortchanging the system by skipping safety studies altogether or extrapolating small amounts of data to the entire population. But there are things that we've learned that the FDA can do better. Similarly with the CDC and all of our other agencies, we've learned that depoliticizing them and allowing some common sense into the process is going to make a lot of difference.
Yeah. Is there anything that you've lost through all of this, through being outspoken, going against the grain in a lot of instances?
You're not the first to ask. There are a lot of people who have asked, have you lost friends? Have you lost professional opportunities? In my case, exactly the opposite. What happened is when I began to speak out, I had so many people who I had not heard from in years, or people who I didn't even know before, who said, you know what? I actually totally agree with you. I'm afraid of saying anything because I don't want to be censored, or I don't want to be hurt or lose my job or lose my social connections, et cetera. But I agree with you. Keep it up. And guess what's happened? My friendship circle has expanded exponentially as a result. There's so many people who I've met, even just on Twitter, for example, who I'm now friends with in real life, not only in my own immediate community, people who I've flown out to, you know, and seen in person, who I'm now talking to on a regular basis. And I think, so for me, I've tried to take a crisis and turn it into an opportunity to really expand who I know. And I've met a lot of like-minded people and I've made a lot of new friends as a result. Sure, there were times at which I had a handful of people who really disagreed and said, oh, I'm going to not talk to you anymore. And those people, by and large, with a couple of exceptions, have come around. And I think our friendships are even closer now that they respect me for having spoken my mind and trying, you know, and tried to speak the truth all along.
You know, part of the purpose of the Undivided podcast is to try to get, it doesn't necessarily have to be moderates, but people across the political spectrum who are able to use rational thought and common mm-hmm. sense and realize that their worldview, it does not always align with other people's, and that's okay, to get mm-hmm. them to find their voice and to be brave enough to speak out. And I guess I'd ask you, as sort of an example to them, what made you think that you could speak out and it would be fine? Or did you not know if it would be fine?
I always believe it's fine. I've been taught by my parents. I've been taught by my faith. I've been taught even when I was a high school student in an Air Force cadet program called the Civil Air Patrol, that if you see something happening and you tolerate it and you don't speak out, you're just as guilty. And I've experienced this in many aspects of my life. It's part of my personal set of values. It's what I'm teaching my kids. And so when I do see something happening, I feel an obligation to speak out because, again, if I don't, I'm responsible, equally responsible. And I can't live with myself doing that. And so, yeah, sometimes you do have to do and say uncomfortable things because you have a duty to the truth and duty to other people. Sometimes when the little guy doesn't have a voice, like a lot of, you know, school children in the public schools who really didn't have a voice against powerful unions and politicians, they needed somebody else who was willing to step up for them, willing and able to really go into the media and push and sometimes put themselves out there. But it was worth it. And I think it's always worth it. You look at the protesters in Iran, they're really putting themselves on a limb because they can be killed. And many of them are killed. I know somebody who was kidnapped by the government. He may be dead by now in Iran solely for attending protests and tweeting or texting videos, you know, to his family in the U.S. I don't think anything that any of us do here in the media in any way approaches what the people in Iran are doing in order to achieve freedom. And so if they can do it, we sure as heck can as well.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, you know, on the same note, I hear from people all the time who are just pissed off still. You know, they really, mm-hmm. we talked about grudges earlier. They were vilified, they were demonized, they yep. were painted as something they're not for having reasonable questions about what was happening in Washington State and beyond. And they harbor a lot of anger still about that. Yep. And some of them I worry about, like you've got to sort of try to find a way to move forward. What would your advice be to them, to people who feel so deeply wronged that they just cannot get past it?
Well, first, I think it's normal. Yeah. I think it's absolutely acceptable that people are in that position where they can't get past it, especially if their kids were out of school or they themselves were, if their business or job was destroyed, if their value of their savings has been erased because of inflation, because of so many other things, right? If they were just ridiculed and mocked and told that they're stupid, you know, I think the worst thing you can do is to tell them your emotions are wrong, because I think their emotions, in fact, are very valid. I think the way to help them is to A, show them how right they actually were, right? Not just by saying it on a one-on-one basis, as I do all the time, but really for, like I said before, to have that national reckoning, to have that national COVID commission, so we can really codify this to say, yes, officially, the position of the U.S. government was that you were wronged. right? And I think to go beyond that, perhaps, and I hate to use the word reparations because it has been so politicized, but I do think to compensate people who have been disproportionately hurt, including, school children in disadvantaged communities who, you know, really couldn't have any alternatives to education. I think not necessarily giving them money by saying, hey, you know what, we're going to fund private tutoring for you as much as you need. We're going to give you a college scholarship if you need, and any other type of job training and assistance in the future because of how you were wrong. And doing similar things to business owners, doing similar things to other individuals who really have suffered in a way that you can't just correct by saying sorry or giving a couple of dollars to upfront. Yeah. And beyond that, I think the other thing is through action, is to say, you know what, if you are angry, take your anger and put it into not only voting, but in getting everyone else around you who is similarly angry to go and vote as well. And I think this is the US, that unlike Iran, where those people, the only way they're going to get what they want is unfortunately to kill and burn. In the US, we don't have to do any of that. Nobody has to be heard, right? We don't have to burn anything down. All we have to do is fight at the ballot box. And it simply takes enough people to do that. And so to all these people who are angry, if they're not out there voting and translating their frustrations and anger into actual electoral change, then nothing's really going to happen. And I think that's really the best, most productive way of harnessing that those sentiments.
Well, Dr. Uman Hammadi, we appreciate you joining us again. I just think that, you know, what you've said is such a good takeaway for folks to be able to learn from. Anything you want to leave us with?
No, just to have a great weekend and keep up what you're doing. I think you're providing really an excellent service to the population, to the community, by having different perspectives on and really highlighting all the things that we can do better.
That's what I wanted. I wanted a compliment. That's really what I meant to get from you. So you delivered. All right. Well, hey, I appreciate it so much.
It's a pleasure, Brandy. Thanks for having me on.
A big thank you to Dr. Hammadi for taking the time to join us and to be one of our truth tellers. And I think to set a really important example about how even in the face of laws that would cost him his medical license, how he really believed in the importance of speaking truth during the pandemic. And on a lot of fronts, Dr. Hammadi and people like him have been truly vindicated about some of the things that they were saying early on that everyone else has now kind of come around to. All right, thank you so much for joining us on Undivided and for tuning in to this special series. Remember, subscribers get early access to all of these special episodes over the next week. So if you'd like to sign up, you can become a subscriber for $5 a month at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.